Well, I am excited. Hi, Gary. I'm excited today to continue our Sermon on the Mount series. This is our 11th message, and we are in Matthew 5:42. So let's go back up the grassy hill by the Sea of Galilee. And in our last message, we studied Matthew 5:39-41. If you like, if you have it in here, you can in your Bible, you can open up to that section, Matthew 5:39-41. And those verses read this: "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evildoer. If someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other. If they sue for your shirt, give your coat too. If forced to go 1 mile, go two." We paused there after opening up and discussing these verses last time, and we paused there because of time, but the section continues with verse 42. "Give to the one who asks of you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." Now, the commentaries that I've been using sort of either gloss over "give to the one who asks," or they treat it as a disconnected from the surrounding verses, like it's its own thing. But as I sat with the text, I wondered if Yeshua's call to this radical generosity might actually be the key to living out the values that we talked about last Sermon on the Mount message. In fact, we've been calling the Sermon on the Mount a beginner's guide to the kingdom of heaven. And throughout this study, I've come to see that the quality of generosity may be one of the secrets to life in the kingdom of God. So let's begin by reviewing Yeshua's teaching on an eye for an eye from our last message for context, and then we'll muse on generosity and see if we can find this kingdom key. Gandhi was often quoted as saying, "An eye for an eye will make the whole world blind." Clever. Gandhi's interpretation, however, reflects a misunderstanding of the Torah, influenced by Roman values which treated personal retaliation as a right. If an eye for an eye is viewed as a license for revenge, then we might think Yeshua replaces this harsh law with a new law of love. Otherwise, wouldn't the whole world be blind? This we unpacked our last message. We discussed the problem with this reading, that the Torah itself forbids personal revenge, and the Torah itself is filled with love and mercy. An eye for an eye is actually a judicial principle intended to limit violence, requiring a court to prevent cycles of revenge that often span generations. Additionally, Judaism has always interpreted an eye for an eye as monetary restitution, not physical punishment. The Jewish understanding of these verses presents alternatives to revenge, which foster peace. Rather than challenge an eye for an eye, Yeshua calls us to return to the heart of this commandment, to become radical peacemakers for love. "Do not resist an evildoer" does not mean do nothing. Instead, in the face of corruption and evil, when the judicial system is no longer of any use, Yeshua offers three creative alternatives that promote peace, justice, and generosity. Turn the other cheek, give your coat, and walk the extra mile. A slap to the right cheek, we talked about, was a backhanded insult meant to humiliate. Under Roman rule, fighting back could be deadly, while cowering in fear only gave your attacker more power. Yeshua offers a new way. Stand firm and offer your left cheek. This forces your attacker to strike with an open hand, treating you as an equal, while exposing the injustice and preserving your own agency, dignity, and humanity. In Yeshua's next example, an unjust court demands your inner garment, the clothes off your back, a mockery as the Torah forbids taking the outer garment. Yeshua's way is bold and witty. When you give them your inner garment, take off your outer garment as well, leaving yourself totally naked in the court. Your nudity exposes the court's injustice and thoroughly humiliates those taking your only clothes. Yeshua's third example, a Roman soldier forces you to carry his gear for a mile, a dehumanizing act you can't refuse without risking a beating. Yeshua's way, carry it willingly. Go a second mile. Again, reclaim your dignity, refusing to be dehumanized, and your generosity will shame your oppressor. In these passages, Yeshua gives us three practical responses to personal offenses and humiliation. Become creative peacemakers that expose injustice while preserving your dignity and honor. Now we come to our verse for today. Give to the one who asks of you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. So let's see what this has to do with becoming creative peacemakers. Yeshua's words reflect Deuteronomy 15. If there is a poor man among you, you are not to harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother. Rather, you must surely open your hand to him, and you must surely lend him enough for his need, whatever he is lacking. Your heart is not to be grieved when you give to him, for because of this thing, the Lord your God will bless you in all of your work and in every undertaking of your hand. So it's fascinating that Yeshua links this command in Deuteronomy with an eye for an eye. While an eye for an eye provides legal alternatives to revenge, and turning the other cheek offers creative paths to peace, a deeper Torah value must guide our response to any conflict: generosity. In Leviticus, we are given another commandment about giving freely. We are not to charge interest on loans to fellow Jews. And the verse closes, because I am Adonai your God, who brought you forth from the land of Egypt to give you the land and to be your God. He's saying, because I gave you freedom, you must freely give in return. Generosity is a response to freedom. In the context of Roman occupation over Israel, Yeshua is telling us to maintain our dignity, our humanity, and our faith in the face of evil. Now, he's telling us to preserve our freedom. And how? Generosity is the opposite of injustice. Injustice involves denying someone of their rights as a human being. Injustice feeds on self-preservation, on greed, on power and control. Generosity promotes another person's rights. Generosity requires self-sacrifice, kindness, a concern and awareness of the needs of others above your own. To be generous, one must be willing to give of himself for the sake of righteousness, trusting in higher values found in the kingdom of heaven. Yeshua is telling us to stand up against injustice with radical generosity. In the worst of times, everything boils down to what kind of person you are and what kind of person you will be. Galilean Jews, hearing the Sermon on the Mount, were experiencing hardship and dehumanization. When they might be reduced to a pack animal for a Roman soldier, Yeshua says, give to the one who asks of you. Do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Animals will tear each other apart for a meal. Occasionally, though, you'll find an exceptional animal who rises above this predatory behavior for survival. I found a real-life example of a dolphin named Pinky. Have you heard of Pinky? From Canada, Pinky would help stranded and injured animals. She guided a baby porpoise back to the water and became a symbol of generosity in nature. We would say that Pinky became more human-like when she gave of herself to help another species. I wonder if the same is true with us. So acting out of fear and self-preservation makes us less human. Acting out of generosity makes us more human. Perhaps generosity is actually a prerequisite to freedom. Animals are slaves to their own needs and instinctual desires. We become free when we choose to put others ahead of ourselves. Generosity is not turning a blind eye to injustice. Instead, it's the solution to injustice. Speaking of the qualities of a righteous man, Psalm 112 tells us, he gives freely to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. His horn is lifted high in honor. The wicked will see it and be indignant. He will gnash his teeth and waste away. The desire of the wicked will perish. Generosity is Yeshua's solution to evil. Recently, an anti-Semitic man in Beverly was caught posting hateful messages. I don't know if you saw the article. He had a Nazi flag and was making guns. Oi. The local Chabad rabbi was quoted saying this: when faced with senseless violence, we must respond with senseless kindness. He urged Jews to do random acts of kindness to fight senseless hate. He understood Yeshua's teaching. Generosity is the solution to evil. Let's look at how our Jewish tradition has understood generosity. Jewish tradition distinguishes between two types of generosity. There's spontaneous giving called truma and obligatory giving known as tzedakah. Truma means gift, and it comes from Exodus 25. Adonai spoke to Moses saying, "Tell B'nai Israel to take up an offering for me from anyone whose heart compels him," the verse says. "You are to take my offering. Have them make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them." What makes this kind of gift unique is the phrase, Yidvenu Libo, whose heart moves him. And so this gift, in as we understand it in Jewish tradition, comes from a deep wellspring of generosity. Truma occurs when your heart is so filled with magnanimity that it would be painful not to give, and you find a way to respond somehow. Truma doesn't only mean giving money or material things. It can mean giving your time, your patience, your compassion, your presence. It might simply mean making room for others in your life. This kind of generosity is not defined by the action or the amount. It's defined by the energy and the response that we have behind this. Alan Marinus writes in Everyday Holiness on his chapter on generosity, "I am pointing to a spontaneous, open, trusting, voluntary, inspired, internal overflow that erupts from the inner depths in response to the needs of or the love for another. God is the model of this sort of thing. God needs nothing, yet gives abundantly. In this way, God is an intrinsic giver. A person can also become a giver by intrinsic nature. Most of us would need to train ourselves to reach this level of generosity, but it is possible. Then being generous becomes who and what you are. You have money, so you give money. You have no money, there's food, so you give food. There's no food, but there are ideas, so you give helping words. There are no words, but there is love, so you offer your heart itself." This kind of spontaneous generosity is a spiritual condition of the heart that motivates acts of kindness, peace, and love, and fosters trust in the kingdom of heaven. This is generosity that becomes part of our soul. And it's interesting, you know, we say a warm, open heart is a generous heart. A cold heart is self-protective and stingy. We say, "have a heart," to mean generous. The heart is both the organ of life and of generosity. Without generosity, we lose spiritual life, just as we cannot live without a heart. Yeshua teaches that we nurture generosity by giving to those who ask and not withholding from those who wish to borrow. We respond with largesse, even in small ways. Generosity grows within our soul when we do this. We become more fully human. The opposite is also true. We can become so self-protective that we close off our hearts and become calloused. There's a specific intersection near my house where people come up to cars at the stoplight and ask for donations. And every time I pass, I face an inner struggle. Sometimes I give and my heart swells. Other times I have no cash and I feel both guilty and relieved. Still other times I am in a hurry and I hope that the light will turn green so that I can avoid the intersection altogether. Then I find myself justifying. "It's the same people daily. It must be a scam. We can't help anyone, everyone anyway," you know, all these things. These are important thoughts to pay attention to. They feel reassuring because they justify building walls around our hearts, giving us an excuse to turn away and avoid the discomfort of confronting the needs around us. The Jewish Musar tradition understands that we can't help everyone, and that we need sekel, we need wisdom, we need discernment in life, of course. And yet, each time we look the other way, we build a small wall around our heart. Both of these are true. The most cold-hearted, stingy people often have the most rational justifications and are utterly convinced that they're right. The Hasidic movement advocates giving small amounts simply in order to keep our hearts from becoming blocked. Another way that our hearts can become constricted is by viewing life as a zero-sum game. There's only so much pie, so you'd better get the biggest piece first. But love is not like this. People will sometimes ask, you know, how can you have enough love for each child with a big family? But love is not a zero-sum game. It doesn't divide and run out. It multiplies. The more we love, the more love grows. But if you become self-protective and you guard yourself too tightly for fear of losing something, love shrinks. The Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidism, said cleverly, "In hell, people sit around a banquet table piled high with food. Each person, though, has a 6-foot-long fork that's too long to reach their own mouths, and they starve. In heaven, people sit around the same banquet, but here each person feeds the one across from them with their fork, and all are filled." It's very clever. I remember a lesson I learned about generosity when I was on the Appalachian Trail walking from Maine to Georgia. A candy bar out there holds great value, especially when it's the last one and the nearest town is several days hiking away. I had one candy bar, one of those Snickers bars, you know, tons of calories packed into there, and there was another hiker with me. And so I decided to share the Snickers bar, and I broke it in half, but it didn't break evenly. And so I faced the decision, and I remember this, like thinking this. On the other hand, do I give the smaller or do I give the larger? And thinking of Yeshua's words, I did give the larger half away. And an amazing thing happened. I felt stronger with the smaller half than I would have, I think, if I had eaten the whole thing. Faith and generosity go hand in hand. Not only do we need faith to give, but something spiritual happens when you release what you're attached to for the sake of another. By making others' needs larger than your own, you make room for God to grow bigger inside of your heart. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov taught that the only way to cure a heart of stone and cultivate generosity that flows naturally from the heart is through repeated practice, giving many, many, many times. Now, once we begin practicing giving, then we move from truma to kinds of generosity, to obligatory giving, to tzedakah. Now, while often translated charity, the word actually means righteousness or justice. The Torah commands giving, whether or not our hearts are fully in it. The type of giving is considered an act of justice, regardless of personal feelings. Now, later rabbinic tradition set limits on giving financially. Less than 10% of one's income is considered too low, while giving more than 1/5 is discouraged in order to avoid becoming impoverished and then placing another burden on someone else that wouldn't be generosity. Again, Alan Marinus recognizes the need for balance, and he says this: to be totally self-sacrificing is not a spiritual virtue, because a total denial of self is a transmutation of a total concern for self and a backhanded and contorted way of serving self. It is egotism dressed in the guise of humility and generosity. That said, Jewish law tells us that even the poor person who receives charity is obligated to give tzedakah. Otherwise, the poor would be denied the joy and the reward that comes from performing the mitzvah of tzedakah. We see in the Midrash, when a person gives even a small coin, he or she is privileged to sense God's presence. Proverbs 19:17 says, whoever is generous to the poor actually lends to the Lord, and he will repay them. We might think of Yeshua's teaching when the widow gave the small coin, all that she had, though it was less than everyone else, her tzedakah was measured as greater in the kingdom of heaven. Along these lines, I think that it's a kind of false generosity when a person is unwilling to accept another's generosity and then withhold the reward for that person. While I think we should try to become givers more than we are takers, that is a good statement. It often takes humility to receive generosity well, and to be equally generous in our thanksgiving. There are many beautiful things that happen when a person is generous. Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler asks the question, do you give to the ones you love, or love the ones to whom you give? The answer is that when we practice generosity, it actually creates love, even where it wasn't before. And this is why we find in other Musar texts, a person who gives 1,000 golden pieces to one worthy person is not as righteous as one who gives one golden piece to 1,000 individuals at different times. The one who gave one was helpful. It's good. But the one who gave and gave and gave grew generosity within. Generosity is a heart skill that we must practice. We practice by giving tzedakah, whether or not we're moved, so that generosity becomes a lifestyle. And then when moments of need arise, you will have become a person of generosity, where your love and compassion simply bubble out. Marina suggests finding 3 opportunities a day to show gratitude, from a tithe to a dollar in a person's cup to offering your seat, holding the door, giving up your place in the line at the grocery store or the RMV, visiting a sick person, making a phone call to someone who is alone, allowing someone else to be right. Forgive when wronged. Apologize to restore a relationship. Spending time with those who need you most. A gift of service. Make a commitment or a promise and stick to it. This is all being generous. Now, someone in my life, if I can say without, you know, who embodies generosity, if I can just cavil a little bit, is Raina. She really embodies generosity. And I see her with the babies, you know, night after night after night, and teaching the kids at school, doing everything. And I mean, it's just fully giving herself. It's like her whole life is built around nurturing and growing those around her. And I admire her for this. I do. And so many of you here, I could list everyone here. I mean, you're all so generous, and there's so many different attributes of generosity and ways that expresses itself in your life. We have a community that is permeated by generosity. I mean, that is Ruach Israel. It's wonderful. So let me close with this. A mood is a passing state of being. When we decide to adopt a mood and repeat it, it becomes an attitude. When we practice an attitude, it becomes a belief, a value. When we live out of our beliefs, they become part of our identity. A generous mood is a good thing, but it's fleeting. When we adopt a generous attitude about life, our hearts will soften. When we practice that attitude, it will become a belief. In the Sermon on the Mount, Yeshua is asking us to practice generosity as a lifestyle so that it becomes part of our identity. Practicing generosity when times are good and practicing generosity when times are tough, it will preserve our faith. Practicing generosity even in the face of evil or injustice will preserve our humanity and our freedom, and in the end expose injustice and expose the power-seeking people in the world for who they really are. So we turn the other cheek. We give our coat in court. We walk the extra mile, and we give to those who ask. And now we are prepared to hear Yeshua's next words. You have heard it said, love your neighbor, yet I tell you, love your enemies. And that will be for our next message. For now, generosity is a secret to becoming more and more human, more and more in the image of God. And just like we read in Exodus about coming together with our gifts to build a presence for Hashem, perhaps generosity is how we build a home for God here in our hearts, our families, and at Ruach Israel. So, Shabbat Shalom, everybody.